Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to innovabiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
Branding is, it comes down to a four-word definition, which I go over in my book, is called the art of differentiation. And that's because brands exist because people exist. There's all of us out here who have, you know, hundreds, thousands, or more of options, choices, places to buy from, different similar to services or products or whatever that we want. Or we might look for, you know, coaches or consultants or supplements and stuff like that. How do we tell one from the other? We can't tell one from the other. Branding isn't happening, no matter how pretty it might appear.
Hi there, innovator. It's really great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I trust, too, that you enjoyed my recent conversations with Michael Vann, the author of Buying Out the Boss, and with Tony DeVale of Life Masters. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, David Breyer. He's one of the world's top branding experts. David is a branding veteran who for over three decades has provided branding strategies, brand identities, and package design for startups, retail, technology, and tourism brands. His work is so good it's been featured in Adweek, in Forbes, in Fortune, in Fast Company, the New York Times Magazine, Inc., just to mention a few of the many publications where his work has been featured. He's also helped build the brands of the New York City Ballet, Revlon, Estee Lauder, Botanical Bakery, Coco Polo, Legacy Chocolates, the New York Times Magazine, and many, many more. David is also author of the best-selling book, Brand Intervention, 33 Steps to Transform the Brand You Have into the Brand You Need. This book has been called the Branding Bible, and it's no wonder when you hear the list of customers that David has worked for and the accolades he's received. In our discussion today, David talked to me about how a brand is the entire customer's experience and the customer's transformation. He also explained that a brand is the art of differentiating. And he further explained that a brand needs to build an emotional connection with their audience via the brand story. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from David Breyer. Hi, I'm your host Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Menemone in Wisconsin in the USA, David Breyer, who's a brand strategist that has worked with many of the world's leading brands. He's the creative director of DBD International, and he's also author of the best-selling book Brand Intervention, 33 Steps to Transform the Brand You Have into the Brand You Need, which has been called the Branding Bible. So welcome to the podcast, David. It's a real privilege to have you as my guest.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate you having me.
Ted Rubin, who was our guest on episode 262 of the Innova Buzz podcast, suggested that we have a conversation with you, David. So a big hello to Ted.
He's always been a very, very smart man.
Yeah. And I saw a couple of Instagram posts from him this morning before we started chatting. Now, before we start talking about all things branding, tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are today. What were some of the pivotal moments in that journey?
Oh, goodness. Well, I'm a native New Yorker. And I mean, to give like the sort of like the real rapid fire snapshot overview is native New Yorker, born in Brooklyn, raised in Queens, was an art major, decided to become a designer in my last semester of college. It was a very conscious decision. It wasn't one of those, oh, I didn't make it as an illustrator, so therefore, you know, it wasn't one of those routines. It was just very conscious because I was exposed just in my last semester with regard to what really, really could be done with design as a craft, as a tool of communication. And that intrigued me greatly. And so that was how I basically got into the sort of ring of design and branding and communication and story. All of those things to me work together. I approach what I approach very much like a composer, in that I'm not like Bernie Taupin, who just wrote the lyrics. I'm not like Elton John, who just wrote the tunes, you know, and I'm not just an instrumentalist who might just be like a session player in a studio. I look at the whole big picture and how all those things come together to create an amazing song that we all want to hum. That's basically kind of my job.
Yeah, that's a great metaphor. So it actually leads me on to one of the things I was going to open up with and ask you about, and that's what exactly is a brand? Because a lot of people, I think, have the view that your brand is like your logo and your corporate colors and the fonts you use and, font sizes and maybe, you know, how you present your brochures and your website. But I think it's a lot more than that, isn't it?
Completely. That's kind of like saying, well, isn't a car just the outside chassis? Ignoring the fact that there's actually a motor and there are lots of mechanical parts under the hood, you know, and there's brakes and pedals and steering wheels and different things. Or we can even get even real personal and go, that's like saying some of these celebrity or higher profile people who are just beautiful, but provide no depth of adding value to others or looking at sort of the human condition or how things, or just any deeper than just, wait a second, I have my perfectly tanned skin and I have my perfect 38, 24, 36 figure, you know, yeah. It's like, you know what? That kind of gets tired quick. That's the skin. So to me, a brand, all the things you mentioned, logo, typography, color, imagery, all those things, those are the result of having a brand. And those are proof. You can't really have, some people can try and do those. And those are people are in the business, they're actually in a different business than I consider myself to be in, because they're just making stuff look pretty. They're like, basically they're doing makeup. Okay. Yeah. Right. So the thing is you know what, there's something deeper. And so you got to have a brand story. If you really understand branding, if you study my book, you understand branding. If you haven't, you probably don't. Not you, but just your listeners. Mm. And so the thing is that branding is, it comes down to a four-word definition, which I go over in my book, is called the art of differentiation. And that's because brands exist because people exist. There's all of us out here who have, you know, hundreds, thousands or more of options, choices, places to buy from, different similar to services or products or whatever that we want. Or we might look for, you know, coaches or consultants or supplements and stuff like that. How do we tell one from the other? we can't tell one from the other, branding isn't happening, no matter how pretty it might appear. So if you understand the breadth, you will start at the core, the nucleus, and you'll know the right questions to ask. And then you will build upon that and actually add something more and more meaning, so that by the time you get to designing and the things that we all then obviously see, because some people might say, what's the Nike brand? They might go, what's the swoosh? Well, yeah, it's a little bit deeper than the swoosh.
Yeah.
Right. And so the thing is that that's the component. It's much deeper. Think of it as an onion, and we're going to the center, going on the out, and it's not just the outer skin that actually defines what a brand is.
Yeah, that's a really good explanation. And I like the idea that the brand is the differentiator. What's your point of differentiation? To me, the Nike swoosh and other examples like that, they're a trigger that, yes, we associate that with Nike and the Nike brand, but it's a trigger that conjures up a whole lot of things in people's minds, and it may be different things in different people's minds. But I think one of the things you talk about in the book is that branding is the human experience. So for me, that logo is kind of the trigger that brings up that expectation of, this is the experience I'm going to have.
Completely. And actually, just to add a little more, just to give more context. So you take a brand like Nike, right? When we see the Nike swoosh, what does that do? That reminds us all of the things that Nike stands for, right? Based on the stories that they've told, which is about, the achievement of excellence, about striving for that next layer of performance, et cetera. So that is sort of like the reminder, the little trigger. Same thing, with Apple. I mean, had there not been Steve Jobs with all the innovations and all of the various things and truly making it a people-centric technology company rather than a technology-centric technology company, which all technology companies had been prior to Apple, right? That seeing the Apple icon reminds us of all of those other layers of meaning. Whereas you take a brand like Target, we see the bullseye. Is there much story to that? Hell no. Yeah. It means nothing. It's a shopping destination where you're going to go get stuff. It might be it's going to be somewhat nicer than what you get at Walmart, but it's going to be, still economy conscious. And you'll probably have some better choices, but there's not much layer to the story. They never built their brand story. They never exposed the soul of their brand. The great brands have exposed their soul and connected to us, the viewers.
Yeah, well, I'd like to explore that story a bit. But before we do that, one of the things that I was curious about, the title of the book, Transform the Brand You Have into the Brand You Need. So tell us a little bit more about why you've used that as a title.
Well, a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of startups, they're like, well, we like this look, right? This leading corporation, well, they've done XYZ, so why don't we just do our version of XYZ? It's so one-dimensional and it's so shallow, and it doesn't basically challenge the notion of, wait a second. Like here's a great question. I'll give you why this is so vital. One of the questions I very commonly will ask a client is, I will say, and especially ones that have been in business for 10, 20, or 30, or 40 years, I will say to them, if you were to start your company today, would you be doing the exact thing in terms of how you're presenting your brand to the world? Would you be presenting it in the same way that you are presenting it today, with the same presentation visually, the same storyline, the same this, today? No baggage, no history, no nothing, today, so that you actually will be heard and seen and noticed and be sticky with the existing choices that exist today. Would you be doing the same thing? And the answer is invariably no. Well, of course not. We would do blah, blah. We would change blah, 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 blah. Well, let's look at that. It's like, what are you holding on to and why? Especially companies that have been in business for quite some time, because and it always astonishes me, and it always blows the minds of the companies, is that we'll find that one, what they stood for 20 or 30 or 40 years ago is what people remember. And that company has been doing a poor job of navigating the evolution so as to keep their relevance relevant today. So what happens is like, so a company was known for XYZ 40 years ago, and now they're still known for that. But yet, that actually now only represents maybe 25% of what the business actually provides in terms of value. There's a whole unrepresented 75% that hasn't been well articulated, hasn't been made relevant. And so they're kind of inheriting their own history and not really defining their future history is what happens. So that's the thing, is that you need to, so it's really a matter of like moving you from the brand that you have to the brand that you need. That transformation needs to happen. And if you do it well and you have a good solid foundation, you'll be able to navigate that pivot very organically without ever abandoning. You're not following the followers, but you have a breadth. Like, just do it. What is just do it. You know what? Like, maybe tomorrow their sneakers are going to be made out of bamboo. Mm. Is that going to change? Just do it. No. If that subscribes to that value that they've set. So brands need to be built on values. Brands need to be deeper. Brands need to start at the right place and not just be caught with the, ooh, so-and-so looks like that. Let's copy them. Yeah. Or, oh, that's a popular color. We just heard that the trends for colors for 2020 are these colors. Let's do those. It's like, that is such shallow short-term thinking.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, you've referred quite a number of times now already to story and how brands should really be based on the story of the business or the story of the people in the business. So talk to us a little bit more about that and how can each of us in our business kind of develop that story, or not develop it, but bring out that story, identify what is that story that's going to resonate with our potential clients, and also how do we translate that into the whole brand experience?
Well, the first thing is stop talking like your industry. And what I mean by that is like recently I rebranded a company in the HVAC space, right? Basically, you know, air conditioning and furnaces and stuff like that. And whenever I spoke to them, they talked like engineers.
Yeah.
I said, the people you sell to actually talk that way? Not really. I said, well, why the hell are you talking that way? You could talk that way inside, but when you're talking to people outside, talk the way they talk. So that's an important ingredient with regard to the stories, because you know, stories connect us to things. To me, I think of stories as like the oxygen for brands, so that they actually get a chance to breathe. You know, take me on a journey. Paint pictures for me. Take me someplace that I can envision, that I can immerse myself into the human experience, because a great story is going to transport me from this level of understanding at the start of it to at the end of it, whether it's a 2-minute story, a 5-minute story, an 18-minute TED Talk story, or whatever kind of story, there's going to be a transformation. A story will do that. Features won't do that. Features, oh, and we've got blank, and we've got blank, and we've got blank, and we've got blank. And it's just like, that doesn't engage people. They feel like they're being hammered. They feel like they're being pitched. But a story is different. A story brings in the human component. And that's what we all share that. We understand a challenge. We all understand an obstacle. We all understand having an aspiration to overcome. Well, you know, I always wanted to be a blank, blank, blank. And I ran into this and it sucked. It was horrible. Oh, man, it was devastating. I remember the first girl that I kissed. Oh, my God, was it embarrassing? Oh, you know what I mean? It's like, I mean, bang, someone can connect to that, right? You know, or geez, you know, it's like, you know what? We actually, I mean, like, I'll give you a great example. Great example. I mean, even just with this HVAC company that I told you about, like I moved them from, they had a horrendous prior name, And now the name is called Cocoon, right? Which immediately evokes an idea of protection and warmth and all of that. And I said, they had an event, a trade show, where they were going to be coming out fully, like unveiling the brand. And so I designed a shirt that just said, the next most comfortable thing is a hug. That's what the shirts say, yeah. Right? It's like, it's not like, oh, the best engineering, blah, 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 yeah. Blah, 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 right? It's just, how do you humanize it? So that's what stories do. Stories humanize.
Yeah, that's really important. And then the differentiator. So how do you build the differentiator on top of a story like that?
Well,
because that's where people fall into the trap of, you know, our point of differentiation is, well, we're the most energy efficient, or we're the we have the quietest units, or whatever it might be.
Totally. All right. So that's an excellent question. And here's how it works. The biggest problem is that differentiators, quote unquote, are usually conceived, too commonly conceived, in a conference room with a bunch of people who are inside. They lost touch with the outside, the spectrum of choices that people have. So they don't look at all the other cliches. They don't look at all the language. So the only way, if you and I were to say, hey, you know, we really want to differentiate ourselves. Let's just say that you and I, hey, you know what? We're going to a sporting event together, you and me, right? We're going to go out. We really want to stand out. Let's say we're both single. Neither of us is married. You know, we're both single. We want to track. Maybe we'll like find a girl that we like and maybe go on a date. How are we going to get noticed? There's a whole stadium filled with thousands and thousands of people. How are we going to get noticed? Well, wouldn't we have to know, how's everybody else maybe dressed? If everybody else is, you know, whatever, wearing a particular color theme or this, that, the other, well, or maybe they're all just looking like a bunch of sports crazed bums. Maybe we have to show up, you know, in tuxedos with bow ties. In other words, you have to know where your stuff will be heard and seen to be able to establish a differentiation point. How are people talking? How are people being seen? How are things moving, not moving? You know, I mean, if you have a product that's on a shelf, is everything in a round container? Well, why don't we put it in a square container? I mean, how do we actually differentiate ourselves if everything's just boring and medicinal looking or ultra tech? You know, I mean, if everything's ultra tech, how do we shake it up so that we don't confuse ourselves? We're not easily confused, because the start of any dialogue, any conversation starts at, I know nothing about you. I know no way that you are different than other people. And if we now start talking just like everybody else, the same schmooze, the same this, the same intro, the same blah, 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 are we ever going to arrive at a point where the person goes, oh, wow, this guy's really more interesting. This guy really actually has something to say. This guy has a point to make. No, we'll never get there, because the person will be like, they'll be bored. So, you know, and if everybody's, and there's so many different ways. I actually have isolated 23 different differentiators that any brand can actually incorporate into, into their branding. And, you know, most brands are lucky if they actually incorporate that into one or two. When I say a brand, I'm talking about, I don't care whether you're a person, whether you're a service, whether you're a product, a brand is that thing that you and I can differentiate from whatever else is out there. I mean, there are brands of food. There are brands of stores. There are brands of destinations. There are brands of coaches, right? There are brands of professionals, whether they be legal professionals or accounting professionals. There are brands of products, and there are brands of experiences. I mean, there's so many of these. So you have to look outside. You have to go, okay, what else is being done out there? Because there's something that I say, it's very subtle. I'll repeat it twice. It's that all differences are not the same. All differences are not the same. You don't just go, well, we're just going to be different.
Yeah.
We're just going to be wild and crazy. Well, unless you have actually already assessed that everyone else is not already doing wild and crazy. And as long as wild and crazy is not inappropriate for your space, if you were going, you know what, we're marketing a funeral home and we're going to be wild and crazy. Yeah. Hey, bring in your dead people. You know, that would probably not be appropriate.
Yeah.
You probably wouldn't have too much business, though you might be seen as very different.
Yeah. That's an interesting example. Yeah. Now,
I'm sure some people are turning over in their grave just hearing that one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you never know. You know, the idea of celebrating life rather than, you know, just taking a sad farewell. I mean, there are people that do that.
Yes.
Yeah. So I guess one of the things that you've raised there, and I think this is really important to me as a marketer, is how you understand who your prospective customers are, what they value, what they think, what their needs and aspirations are, and how can your product or service, essentially your brand, deliver on those aspirations and make that connection. So is that a good way to kind of think of branding and a story?
I was listening to your entire question and I got lost in terms of which I'm going to ask you to rephrase that one, because I was listening going, I know he's asking for a particular thing, and I'm going, so rephrase that one. I'm going to, because I want to answer you well, but I there were a lot of nuances to what you touched upon.
Well, let me ask it in a different way then. So the brand story is really important, and we want to make an emotional connection. And I'm guessing that it really is important to know who the customer is and what their needs and aspirations are. So tell us a little bit more about how you connect all those things together.
Absolutely. So you want to, you definitely want to understand the values of your customer. The best brands in the world actually came from former customers.
Hmm.
People who actually were customers who were like, this really sucks. You know, that looking at the existing options, how come nobody's doing blank, 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 right? So the greatest brands in the world came from someone who actually already had an aspiration in the area, and then looked at it and goes, So they were already one of those people that would be their future customers. You also want to understand the values. And to make it super plainly clear, if you were marketing a product to single male professionals who loved working out 10 hours a week, and the most important thing in their world was, you know, how big and broad their chest was and how thick their arms were, versus single moms, I think you could see very clearly there would be a different set of values. Or to put it even more plainly, let's say, or single moms who hate their bodies. Let's say their bodies didn't fully like recover back to their former shape after giving birth to one or two kids. And so now, so you got a single mom, hates their body, low self-esteem, probably is very stressed, you know, have one or two or more kids taken care of. Maybe they're trying to get back in the dating scene, maybe not, who knows? That's going to be a slightly different mindset instead of values than the guy who's like, yeah, I'm pressing 200 pounds, you know, whatever.
Hmm.
So, you know, just, I mean, you know, one might say, oh, well, that's an extreme example. You know what? It is each of our jobs as entrepreneurs, as people in business, to look for those nuances of difference. We cannot get lazy and ignore those nuances of difference in different values. You know, Apple, which I touched upon, you know, they came into a space of basically providing solutions for creative people. Their whole thing was creating computers that were people-centric rather than making people computer-centric.
Hmm.
Get that, right? And prior to them, what happened? It was like everyone was, yeah, you need to learn how to use a computer. Apple's whole thing was, no, you don't. You're a person. It's like, we're going to make the computer learn how to actually be able to embrace you and your inclinations. You know, on the sportswear front, when I was growing up, there were the brands of sneakers were Keds, Converse, and Puma, and Adidas too, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I was in, I think, probably my 20s or something like that, that Nike had come out, and they did something no other brand did before in that space. They actually talked about people. Check that out. Listen to that. They talked about people.
Yep.
Who would think that talking about people would be an innovation, right? Because everything prior to that, they were selling sneakers. Nike never sold a sneaker. They sold the attitude and the lifestyle of just do it, right? And so that was what did that incorporate? That incorporated differentiation, which you talked about. That incorporated story, which you talked about. And that appreciated the values, because everyone had an excuse. And just do it, which was brilliantly ridiculous from one standpoint, but brilliant from the other standpoint. It's like, what the hell? You go, what? Just do it. What does that even mean?
Right? Yeah.
It's like, what does it even mean? But yet it spoke to those of us that maybe wanted to do more in the way of exercise, maybe wanted to do more in the way of maybe having a milestone, maybe wanted to run a 5K, maybe we're training for the Olympics, or maybe we were 80 years old and we're proud of the fact that we walked two miles a day.
Hmm.
It spoke on any level. It was agnostic in that way. It was brilliant. And so does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does.
Awesome.
Great. And I think it highlights, I mean, that's a really good example, because one of the things I was thinking there as you were explaining that was that you need to get really clear about who your niche is. But the Nike example, I think, highlights that, if you do it well, it's across the board. And because they were focused on the human experience, and because they were focused on what's the change that we enable for people, what's the transformation, rather than, we sell sneakers. So it was like, we help, I don't know what the thinking was, but I'm just sort of kind of analyzing it in hindsight. We help people feel better about themselves, or we help people do more, whatever it might be. I mean, it's kind of a bit vague, but it's something that you can build a connection to as a potential buyer of the sneaker.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly right, man.
Hmm. So talk to us a little bit more about that whole idea of, if you come back to the fundamentals of a business, what are you actually selling?
Well, that's the thing. I will always tell a client, it's absurd. 90%+ of my clients don't know the business that they're in. I will sit down with them and I'll say, okay, so tell me what business you're in, and they'll say, well, and the common mistake is, well, we make blank or we do blank. So if they're, so whatever, you can fill in the blank. We do, or we make, fill in the blank. Businesses screw up. They think that what they make is what people are buying. I will repeat that again, because that is like a golden nugget that you could take to the bank. That alone will make your listeners hundreds of thousands of dollars if they implement it correctly. Is that what you make or what you sell is not what people are buying. They are buying something different. I mean, for example, Häagen-Dazs, they made ice cream. But what people bought was the ultimate adult indulgence. At the end of a stressful day, they'd take the pint home and they'd freaking devour it, right? And or Porsche, what do they make? They make cars. But people buy the ultimate status status symbol in the passing lane.
Yeah.
Right. It's like the envy. It's like, yes, I am the catalyst for road envy. That's me. right? And so that's the thing to understand. You know, well, I coach blah 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 blah. You know, people don't care if you coach something, but they will care if you transform them from this undesirable state to this desirable state. You see, you know, or well, they don't care that you make the finest blah 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 health supplements, but they do care if they actually feel better and look younger and actually have more energy. You see, that's it's these kinds of nuances.
Yeah, and that to me, that is a really important part of branding. It's what's the promise you make? What's the change that you help empower your customer to make?
Yeah, and not to confuse features with the transformation. Don't get so feature hungry. There's two races that I will never, ever, ever encourage anybody to do. Don't ever go to the race to the bottom of like, oh, well, they're charging this. We'll charge a little bit less. That's ridiculous. Then the other one is the race to the top, which is, oh, they have 12 features. We have 15. I mean, so those are the two races not to get involved in. You need to understand these other issues that we're talking about. Value, values, story, you know, the point of differentiation. Your audience's values, what the values aren't just, I mean, some people will hear values and they'll go, oh, good. So we just need to talk about our mission statement. Stop talking about yourself. It's not about you.
Yes, I love that. And I think I'm not sure that this was in the book or whether it was in one of your posts that a good brand makes us feel good about what they stand for, and a great brand makes us feel good about what we stand for.
Yep, that's in the book, chapter 26.
All right.
Yep.
So the story, so how do you construct a really good story and one that kind of builds a successful differentiation strategy? Where do you start?
I always start out there looking at what the amount of noise that's out there, right? You need to know the amount of noise. If I have a story, it's going to be compelling. I got to know, you know, am I up against a tsunami of just completely like crazy white noise? Or is it really like quiet where there isn't much competition? You know, it's kind of like knowing when to zig and knowing when to zag, but it's doing it proactively, not reactively. So it's always starting out there and going, okay. Like, for example, I mean, let's take a look at the LinkedIn space as an example, right? I mean, LinkedIn is a very, very hot. It's getting hotter and hotter and its social platform relevancy, and et cetera. And what happens is probably about every third, fourth person is like, a quote-unquote LinkedIn expert, right? You know, and then about every fifth to eighth person is kind of like personal brand specialist, you know, and then you know, and every, you know, every other person is practically a social media ninja, right? You got all these isms. It's like, how the hell are you going to stand out about that unless you've actually assessed that that's the level of noise? You gotta outsmart that. You gotta figure it out. You might have to create a new category.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, I even applied that when I with you know as I had been developing my own brand. I mean, my website, risingabovethenoise.com. I mean, that's my website. But you know, the whole concept was defying gravity and rising above the noise. And my title is Chief Gravity Defier. Right. And so you kind of have to just kind of know where you are. As far as, and that was because I was starting out there. Because I found, in my own observation, designers were not as valued as someone who could actually build a brand, right? Because the designer oftentimes was like, you know, like there were a few exceptions, but they're more the exceptions, not the rule. Designer was normally perceived as like, oh, okay, there's a lot of different designers. And that just seemed to be like, you know, cosmetic. And that didn't add much value. And so I wanted to just change that whole dialogue. I don't normally refer to myself as a designer much. I mean, I do it, of course, and it's part of my arsenal of tools, but you know, I very consciously don't frame myself that way because it's not from the right position of strength.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things you said earlier, and I've had a lot of guests on that are examples of this, and I think this is really always a great way to start a business is if somebody identifies a need that they have themselves and solves that need for themselves and then decides there must be other people there in the world that have this same need. So now, because we have been our own customer, now we can develop this product and we have a little bit of knowledge about the customer, a typical customer to start with.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that it goes back to what I said. It's like, you know, a lot of the innovative companies, the companies that changed industries, were driven by those who were themselves dissatisfied customers in a particular niche.
Hmm.
And then they actually said, well, why not? And so, I mean, even like, what is his name? I think his first name is Richard Dyson. You know, it's like,
yeah,
he did 5,000. No, not everybody knows this. He did 5,000 prototypes before nailing his turbine system and using color and using design and using all the different things and positioned it. And they crushed the competition so fast because everybody else was complacent and lazy.
Mm.
They'd gotten lazy. I mean, if you want to basically have a lousy career, or a lousy brand, get complacent. Just you know, kind of get lazy.
Yes.
Ride on yesterday's achievements. Your days are numbered.
Hmm. So. Yeah. Well, I lived through that in the very early days of my career because when I first started out my career as a chemist, I was working for one of the traditional film manufacturers in the days when the digital photography got launched into the consumer market. And yes, there was very much like, you know, the attitude was, oh, it's not as good as film and we just keep making better films.
Yeah.
And to me, yeah, that comes back to what we were talking about before, the idea of what are we selling? So, you know, in those days, the photography companies thought they were selling film and paper to photographers, whether they were professionals or hobby photographers. But they didn't consider that what they were really selling was the ability to capture images. And once there was a more convenient way to do that,
yeah,
all of a sudden their business model was broken.
Totally, totally. Well, that's the thing. I mean, one thing I talk about is no brand can ever be they can never be married to their own solution.
Hmm.
Being married to their own solution is wrong. Being married to the customer's desire and aspiration, that's the thing to be married to. Do not get married to your own solution. That's why Blockbuster only has one remaining store in Oregon. Because they were married to their solution.
Yeah.
What was their solution? A brick and mortar location for people to get out, to have to drive over to us, and so they can buy DVDs or VHS, and then we get to upsell them on popcorn and Twizzlers and all this crap on their way out. So then they go home and they were married to that, and they ignored what Netflix didn't ignore.
Hmm.
Netflix started out as, you know, they mail.
That's
mail,
right.
Order.
Mailing things. Yeah.
Yeah. And so now if they were married to that, they would have ignored the factor of, wait a second, we can actually stream stuff.
Hmm.
Oh, wait a second. Not only can we stream stuff, we can actually generate original content. Hmm. You know that they're the actual number one producer of original TV programs in the world.
Yeah, yeah. I was reading that the other day and I thought that's pretty amazing. And I know I'm a Netflix subscriber, so I know from scanning through my list, I think, gee, there's like, it used to be that there were perhaps 10 or 15% of, you know, Netflix branded content in there. And now it seems to be like it's 2/3 or maybe even 3/4.
Yeah, originality is such an overlooked factor. I mean, do you have Trader Joe's out where you are? Do you have Trader Joe's?
No, we have Aldi, which is very similar.
Well, it's not that similar. Mm. I mean the thing on Trader Joe's is probably closer to Whole Foods
mm.
than an Aldi's. But Trader Joe's, what's interesting, they've built their empire. So one, they have a certain, they're almost kind of like a food co-op, but not quite. It's kind of like, I don't totally understand the appeal, because I will be honest, I don't get the exact appeal. But the one thing that I do know is that they private label so much of their stuff. Mm. I would say they probably have, probably along the lines of maybe 80% of the products you see there are under the Trader Joe's banner, and their design, and they have a really sort of funky, almost hippie-like, you know, sort of retro, free spirit sort of design. But it's everything from chocolates to salsas to olive oils to vinegars to cheeses to meats to this, that, the other. And so you go in and it's like, and what happens? You and I, as the consumer, go, oh, I really love that Trader Joe's blah, 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 blah salsa, right? You go, okay, well, where am I going to go for that? Trader Joe. So, you know, so it's just like, it's just how you structure stuff. I mean, it's a very smart strategy. I will give them that. It's a smart, smart strategy. But very few consumers probably realize they might make 5 or 10% of what they're actually selling, and the rest is just private labeled.
Hmm. Right. Yeah, that's right. I mean, the other thing, you know, I've experienced a few Trader Joe's when we were in San Francisco. And the other thing that struck me there that was a key differentiator, and I think this is relevant to our conversation, is the whole culture seems to be very much focused on the customer. So, you know, people would help you load your goods at the checkout into a bag. I don't recall that they had any self-checkouts, whereas, you know, the big supermarkets are all going to 90% self-checkouts.
I hate those.
Yeah.
I from a user experience standpoint, absolutely.
So that, you know, Trader Joe's clearly, you know, my experience was that, you know, there were people there to take care of you. They'd pack things in your bag. They'd take care of how they packed things. So they'd put, you know, the heavy things, they'd spread them out. They'd put the fragile things, like the eggs, they'd make sure they'd go on top of the heavy things so that they wouldn't get squashed and so on. And always very friendly. So again, you know, that's all part of that brand experience.
Totally.
Hmm.
Totally. Yeah.
Okay, well, this is fascinating, David. I could keep talking branding and all kinds of stories. I mean, we've talked about how important the story is to a brand, so I think we've shared a few stories here. I'm watching the time, so I think it's a good point to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round, and it's designed to help our audience, who are primarily leaders and innovators in their field, with some tips from your experience. So I've got 5 questions, and hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers and inspire the listener to go and do something awesome today as a result.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If any of my answers disappoint you, then you just say, David, that was lame. What are you, a butthead? I've built you up. I've told the world how awesome you are, and now you've let us down. Give us a really good one. So just nail my butt to the wall if I disappoint.
Okay. All right. Well, what's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Have a tireless curiosity.
Hmm.
Have a tireless, inquisitive curiosity.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, you know, it's interesting that we kind of lose that along the way, isn't it? When you think of the 2 and 3 year olds out there that are always asking why, and, you know, the response to the answer that you give them as to why is, oh, why? It just keeps going, right? They just keep digging deeper into understanding and being curious. All right. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Look. I look a lot. I watch a lot. I listen. I do not ever tire of wondering, is that the best there is?
Hmm.
That's kind of like my sort of, It's kind of like my unspoken own thing of, is that the best there is? Can it be any better?
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. I think there was a song with a title similar to that, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but you know, but the real trick is, how do you do that and not like get jaded? Because once you start doing that, you'll probably find there's quite a bit of disappointment. Like, yeah. Wow, people got, you know, this got lazy, or this chef got lazy, or this entrepreneur got lazy, or this tech company got lazy, or this consultant got lazy, or this author got lazy. You start seeing things go on autopilot. So the trick is you must develop the discipline to continuously be able to admire and appreciate people while asking, can this be better? You don't go down the road of, can this be better? And then go, boy, this person sucks. I hate them. What a lazy bum. What a schmuck. You know? So it's kind of like, it's a two-sided thing to be able to ask, question, but yet at the same time, don't hold it against people because that, if when that happens, you can't, because it'll be a downward spiral. It'll be like
yeah. Yeah, I think it's good to remind ourselves that everybody's doing the best they can with what they have and what they know. So where I might see a gap, it's because I know something that somebody else doesn't, or particularly if you're coming in with that inquisitive attitude and that curious attitude and saying, is that the best way to do that? That's an outside view that sometimes can be very refreshing, but at the same time, that's my view and may or may not be relevant. So I think you've got to sort of balance that all out.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, do you have a favorite resource that you use a lot?
For what? Innovation?
Yeah, for innovation in your business.
Listening to inspirational thought leaders, I would say. You know, good quality discussions, things that inquire, good smart questions, good smart thinking. Things that challenge, you know, if I ever manage to get lazy, I really enjoy listening to Gary Vaynerchuk, you know, because I mean, sometimes he'll lay an egg, but more often than not, he's you know, the stuff he says, I can relate to. It's real. It's street smart. There's a practical application to it. It's not just a wonderful notion. That then the connecting strand between that great idea and real life is, there's not a big disconnect. So things like that is what I find is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting. I was going to ask you if you had a favorite thought leader you listened to. So Gary V. He's a really good example of the differentiation we were talking about earlier.
Yep.
And also, he does inspire. I find he inspires a lot of people to think that they can be like Gary V, and they don't differentiate themselves, and they try to be what he is, and they forget that, you know, the old idea of the overnight success. Probably, I don't know how long it took him, but it was definitely more than a few years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there are those who go down copycat lane, and then there are those who just say, you know what, those are lighting my afterburners to really kind of just up my game as an entrepreneur, and that's great too.
All right, now what's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
I find the best way is to continuously keep them engaged, and to continuously challenge their notions, and keeping them engaged is the collaborative aspect. and the other is not letting them get lazy. So I think it's those two things.
Hmm.
Keeping them engaged is going to just that they feel, oh, there's progress, and they get it and they see it. But the flip side is that it's like, I find that I, with my tireless curiosity, that I will find that I say, hey, by the way, you know, I was looking at this. I'm wondering why blank, 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 blank. Like, I never take anything for granted. It's like, why is this being done? Or what's the rhyme and reason with regard to that? So that aspect of asking, and, you know, sometimes it's going to be more, it's like, by the way, I know, by the way, I noticed that this happened when I, called in, da, 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 da. And that was from an outside perspective. If I didn't know you guys, I would hate you right now.
Hmm.
You know, I might say something like that. But are you aware that that's happening? You know, I'll say that. And sometimes they'll go, well, no, geez, we had no idea. Thank you for telling us, right? So it's kind of like, so it's collaborating, which is a togetherness, a synergy. And then the other is willing to make sure they're not going on autopilot on lazy things that they should be doing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great advice. So it's a communication at a really honest and open level, and kind of holding them accountable, but also challenging some of the things that you notice from your experience that could be better. So asking that question again, is that the best there is?
Yep.
Okay, now we have talked about this at length, but I'll ask the question in a specific way. What's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Be smart. Have pride. Have pride. I find that if someone has pride, they will not get lazy. And by having pride, that means ripping out of your own world any notion of entitlement. No one's entitled to crap.
Hmm.
It does not matter if you're the most talented person in the world, the smartest person in the room. I have two viewpoints with regard to karma in business. One is that there is no freaking karma, meaning just because you're doing good, you're like all of a sudden, all good things are going to come to you. That is a freaking notion. That's like an idea of like, that's a Hollywood script.
Hmm.
I think it's bull crap. And at the same time, if you do good by people, yes, you will, that it will come back to you. I'm a firm believer in that as well. But the difference is that I don't look at me doing good. I don't do good with the expectation that because I'm doing good, good things will now come to me. That's where you tinge doing good and you contaminate it with a little bit of that entitlement thing.
Hmm.
That entitlement thing will eat you alive. It's like a freaking cancer. So the thing is, I mean, honestly, I can't overemphasize that enough. You are not entitled to anything. Love the hustle. Love the value of what you do for others. Really, really love it, because, man, it's fantastic. The ability to infuse life into something is such an incredible opportunity and such an incredible gift. And you know what? The world has way too few people who actually take the time to do that. So do good without any notion of entitlement. And then you have the opportunity for actual karma to come your way, but don't expect it.
Mm.
Don't sit back and wait. Like, when's it going to happen? Mm. I've been doing good for 5 months. When's it going to happen? You know what I mean? It's like, I'll kill you.
Yeah, I think that's a really important message. I mean, do the right thing because it's the right thing to do, or do good because it's the right thing to do, not because there's a reward associated with it.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
All right. Well, thanks, David. This has been really great. Now, you did mention your website earlier, but where can people find out more about you, read about you, all the blog posts you have, your book? And
oh, yeah, totally. I would say the key thing is that go to risingabovethenoise.com, R-I-S-I-N-G. You can get a free ebook there. You'll see it in the menu. It says free ebook. So, and that also subscribes you to my blog. And that's like the simplest, most direct way. And you'll get information. You'll get alerted about the 1 Minute Wednesdays, which is my YouTube series. You'll see all the new articles. There's over 300 articles of branding case studies. These are not the kind of boring articles of like, okay, and then da-da-da-da-da, and here's a bunch of percentages of from various reports and blah, blah, blah. No, I actually am talking with you. This is real. I will show you. This is what this brand looked like before. Here's what it looks like now. Here's why this was done, why these changes were. Here were the challenges. Here were the things that we dealt with. So it's a lot of, you get to see a lot of the stuff. But risingabovethenoise.com, you go there, grab the free ebook, subscribe, and that'll hook you into more goodies than you can shake a stick at. And you can certainly reach out to me on LinkedIn as well. And so those are probably the two best places.
Okay, that's great. We'll include links in the show notes to both those places and also to the Brand Intervention.
Oh, yeah, Brand Intervention. You can grab it on Amazon.com. You can grab it on Books A Million. You can grab it on BarnesandNoble.com. It's like Amazon occasionally says, well, it's out of stock. And I'm going, well, I don't get out of stock messages from Books A Million or Barnes & Noble. So you can go to those guys. But here's the thing. Listeners, grab the hardcover copy. That is the best production values. Hardcover copy. Because if you come to me with a freaking paperback, I'm probably going to look at you and say, what the hell? Are you too cheap to buy the hardcover? I told you to buy the hardcover. Come on. Don't be a cheapskate. Buy the hardcover, then come back.
Okay. There's the message. Call to action.
Yep.
Right. Okay. Now, is there a single piece of advice you'd like to leave our listener today in regard to them being a leader in innovation and their field, and particularly with respect to branding that we've talked about today?
Well, I think Dwayne Johnson, I think, said it in one of his movies that the world isn't getting better on its own, you know? And so the thing is rise up. You know what? In my experience, we're each a leader much more than we actually oftentimes give ourselves credit for. And so I would advocate really own up to that, own up to the factor of being a leader, and just dig it. It's an awesome thing, and just own up to it. And then once you've reached a certain plateau, own up to the next level, own up to the next level. Never, ever get complacent. If I speak to you, if I run into you and I've asked you if you've gotten complacent and you say yes, I'll say, what are you, a freaking butthead? It's like, knock it off. Like, complacency is lets everyone down. Complacency lets everyone down, no question. And it starts with you and it extends out to others who you could be benefiting in place of complacency.
Yeah, and that's a really good leadership position to take too. First of all, on yourself, to make sure that you're not getting complacent, that you're actually out there looking to improve your world, the things around you, and the people around you.
Completely.
All right. Now, finally, David, who would you like me to chat with on a future InnovaBuzz podcast, and why?
Oh, God almighty. Well, you know who'd be awesome? Well, you know who'd be awesome? Just because I absolutely love her to the ends of the universe is Claude Silver from VaynerMedia. Claude Silver she's the chief heart officer, and she is a very kindred spirit and someone I adore and I love very, very, very deeply. And she's a fantastic, fantastic individual with and an incredible viewpoint of leadership in the world. Just a really bright voice, and that's someone I would advocate. And that's right, Claude, I'm talking about you.
Wonderful. Okay, well, we might get an introduction from you to Claude, and we'll invite Claude on to the show.
Fabulous.
Great. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us today. I've really enjoyed this conversation about branding and learned a lot more that, sort of went deeper to what I've read so far about you on your book and in listen to your YouTube channels. The 1 Minute Wednesday videos are well worth spending a minute on each Wednesday. I will say that to you, the listener. And yeah, I've really enjoyed having the conversation today, David. So I wish you all the best for the future and let's stay in touch.
Oh, absolutely, man. I totally appreciate it. And thanks so much for having me. And Ted Rubin, dude, good job, dude.
Yeah. Hi, Ted. See you later, David.
All right. Thank you so much, man.
I hope you enjoyed that insightful and valuable conversation with David and took something away from what he shared with us today. My highlights were David's message of a good brand makes us feel good about what they stand for, but a great brand makes us feel good about what we stand for. And also his call to action at the end around the world isn't going to get better on its own, so don't get complacent. Be a leader. I'd love to know what you took away from David's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/David Breyer. That is DavidBrier. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/David Breyer. You'll also find contact information for David there, as well as links to the Rising Above the Noise website, the brand intervention book, his social media pages, and also the other resources we spoke about in today's conversation. David suggested that we have a conversation with Claude Silver, the Chief Heart Officer of VaynerMedia, on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So, Claude, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of David Breyer. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got even more fantastic guests lined up, including John Andrews, the CEO of Photify, and Tony DeMeo of Big Media USA. Stay connected with us by subscribing to the InnovaBuzz podcast at innovabuzz.com/subscribe. innovabuzz.com/subscribe. Make sure you never miss another episode. It would also mean a lot to me if you leave us a review, because what you think matters. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your ideas, your suggestions, or questions you have, so go ahead and share them in the comments below the blog post for this episode. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.